This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Invest Talk. Invest Talk is here to help be a friend to you, the average investor out there. We're all about building your knowledge, gaining more knowledge to make better decisions. Give you some added perspectives on what money decisions you're making. That's what the show is for. Today's main talking point poses the question, why the average investor's return is so low? We see time and time again that when the average investor is left to their own devices, they tend to make the same mistakes over and over. And this is fact. This is study of returns over long periods of time. So the question is, does the average investor really understand what went wrong when they failed to get the returns they hope for from the investment? Have you noticed that when you buy something, it goes down? Have you ever asked yourself why? And have you noticed when you sell something, it goes up? Does that happen more often than not to you? And if it does, there's a reason for that. There's something you have to identify in yourself about that. And are you doomed to make these mistakes over and over and over again? No, you're not. You can change that behavior. So hope we'll talk about that today. That's one of our main talking points. Hopefully we can provide some kind of breakthrough in understanding how you're doing this. And there are certainly indisputable truths about investing. But as simple as they are, some folks forget them or think they don't always apply or think that they are applying the rational decision in their investments, and they're not. It's not easy. It's not easy to understand what's driving you. I mean, everybody wants to make profits. Everybody makes a profit, wants to. But what is driving your decision-making process? Okay, so I think we're going to talk about that. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. The first thing to accept about investing is the stock market is four things. There's four things you got to think about. The market will go up. The market will go down. It will, over time, go up more than it goes down. There's almost no chance you can predict with any level of accuracy when it will do these things. You can't time the market. If you try it, you won't win. It won't work. Invest Talk depends on you to keep us in touch with real-life questions about what you need to know, what questions are on your mind. What are value stocks? What makes them different than growth stocks? Do you know? Why are earnings so important? What are the dangers of short selling? Do you know what short selling means? Can anybody short sell in any kind of account? What does investing on margin mean? What is that? Those are kinds of questions. You should all those questions I just asked, you should know them. If you're going to be investing on your own, you should know those right off the top of your head, those kinds of things. And does anybody successfully time the market? You're going to hear people say, I've done it and I've been making a lot of money. But no one does it over any length of time. No one makes money over any length of time in the market. These may be questions on your mind. Do you have an investing strategy? Before you can set one, you have to know what your goals, your risk tolerance. Then you can develop a strategy that fits those goals and risk tolerance. So what is the process for designing a strategy? Anyways, those are the kinds of things we'll discuss. Let's hear your voice on this program. So let's move on and take a question now on our 24-hour listener line. This one came in after our last program, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Pete from Vegas. Listen to the show on iTunes. Love the show. Question I have is on mutual funds. I never, ever, ever, ever buy anything that has a load, any kind of commission that it would be taken out. I have a question on 12b-1. Like, how much does it come down to? You know, if I buy $10,000 worth of mutual funds, you know, does it ding me for a couple of dollars, $50, $100? In any case, let me know what it is. Basically, the question again is, how much is the 12b-1? How much does it actually cost me? And does it compare anything to like a 4, 5, 5.75% load. Thanks again. Listening to the show to hear it. Take care. Bye, guys.
Thanks for the question. He's talking about commissions and money paid to salesmen for mutual funds. There are pure no-load mutual funds. Load means commission. So when you buy a mutual fund, the person who sells it to you, the registered investment advisor, which is what I am, or certified financial planner, they can make a commission selling you a mutual fund, getting you to buy one. And that commission could be upfront. It could be as high as 5%. It could be 1% a year in arrears for 5 years. But he's and he said, I never buy loaded funds, meaning no commission funds. And that's what I suggest to everybody. You don't need to buy a loaded fund. So no matter what, don't buy a loaded fund. Back end, front end, A shares, B shares, none of those. But he's talking about 12B1 fees, which is another way that someone gets paid a commission to sell you a mutual fund. It's called 12B1 fees. And theoretically, this is marketing expense that the mutual fund will pay to people who sell their funds. And the amount that they are, it ranges. It's usually a percentage, a 0.25% to 1 to 1.5% for a 12B1 fee. It's a one-time fee. And will it affect you? Of course. It comes out of the net asset value of the fund itself. Of course it affects you. You have to pay it. So the worst thing you can do is have a commission and 12B1 fees. 12B1 fees is just another way to pay a commission that's coming out of your pocket. And it's much harder to figure out which ones have 12B1 fees and which ones don't than to figure out which ones has commissions or loads. That's easy. But sometimes it's pretty hard to avoid them. Good question, though. Very good question. The latest data shows an average blend of equities and fixed income mutual funds has garnered only 2.6% net return for the average investor who does his own trading. Why the average investor return is so low? That's going to be at one of our main talking points here today. So 2.6%, that's really low. But that's the average net return by someone managing their own funds. And it's the same thing is true of 401ks, even though it's not as bad in your 401k. And we'll address that as to why. But that's what we're going to talk about. Also, I want to talk about the OPEC trying to reach a compromise on supply cuts. You see that fall apart today? We can talk about that. Record iPhone demand for the holiday season. Their bigger phones are pretty popular. And what about the smart way to pay off a mortgage? We've talked about this before in a couple months ago, and I think I need to bring it up. I would love to talk about that. And finally, state capitalism, the SOESs. Do you know what those are? Why they consistently fail to make any money for anybody. Matter of fact, they cost money. State-owned enterprises, SOES. State-owned enterprises all across the world. They become more popular and doomed to failure as they always have been. We're going to talk about that. It's always true. I won't get into it now. But those are the things we're going to discuss on the show unless you call and we discuss something that's on your mind or you want to talk about something different. What happened to today's market? It was boring. It was up and down, up and down, up and down, a very tight range. It ended up with the Dow being down 3%, the NASDAQ being up 4%, the S&P being down 2%. Tight, tight range. But, you know, it's been a very tight range, but slowly eking up all November. In October, huge volatility. In November, much less volatility, was quietly eking up. Up, 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 but very mellow. Not very much volatility at all. Huge volatility in the month before. Drop off like a stone for this month. Don't know why that's true. Don't know why it's happening that way, but that's what it is. Does this tell us anything? I can't tell you that. I'm not convinced it's telling us a thing. I'm really not. But the market has been very strong for a little over a month now. Coming, you know, very sharp return from that 10% correction. 10% correction lasted about a month. to get to a 10% correction. The recapture of that 10% correction, getting back to even, was about 2 weeks. That is the exact opposite of what usually happens. Usually the fall is much faster than the recovery. Not this time. The market has been very odd for a while. Very odd. Maybe that's a new reality. Who knows? If you work at home, you may be the target of well-practiced scams. We've talked about on the show many times the different kinds of scams there are, especially directed at the elderly. We'll have three examples for you on our Invest Talk personal feature later this hour. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now with your money questions.
You're listening to Invest Talk, and we're listening to you.
Can I benefit from a Roth? Would that it lessen my taxes in the future? And what kind of investments can I put into a Roth?
The question I had was about a mutual fund versus the exchange-traded fund. What exactly is between those?
Get your questions to us now at 888-99-CHART. And that's how you can reach Invest Talk anytime.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to BJ in Fremont, listening to us on 1220 AM. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks. I love your shows. My question is regarding to a last discussion some time back we had, where we were discussing about end of QE.
Yes.
And we were discussing as what impact it will have on the emerging market. At this point, dollar is at the highest. The U.S. economy is improving. QE is out of the picture.
Yep.
What do you think is the potential of emerging market at this point?
Well, it's certainly not helping the emerging markets. It kind of is hurting them because when QE ended here in the United States, quantitative easing, the Federal Reserve no longer buying bonds and mortgages. When that ended, other parts of the world were still doing or are doing or continuing QE kind of programs, making our dollar a lot stronger. Okay, and a lot of commodities around the world are traded in dollars, sold and bought, sold in dollars. And so remember, if you're in Vietnam or some country in Asia or even South America, all of a sudden, you know, the things traded in dollars are more expensive to you in your own currency. So it's kind of the ending of QE is kind of hurting the emerging markets and other kinds of markets because of the strength of the dollar. So it's not helping them. That the stop of QE because our government is no longer trying to weaken our currency. And it's hurting the other countries when they have. Remember, a lot of countries have debt in U.S. dollars, so their currency, you know, they have to make more money to pay off that debt. There's all kinds of problems they're having with it, and it's going to be a problem for them. So it hasn't helped them. It's hurt them.
So do you think it is a good time for investing in emerging market or?
I would say not yet. I think that there will be a point when you see the dollar no longer rising, that means there'll be the maximum pain in these emerging markets, and that means that there'll probably be some really good bargains to pick up. I think it's a bit early yet, though. I really do.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. For most, there's plenty of room for improvement in your 401k plan at work rather than just accept less than good choices, which most 401ks are. Why not take a little bit more active role in improving it? Why don't you go to your boss and you can go to investtalk.com, click on the contact Josh and write in 401k. We have a packet of information you can share with your employer that maybe will give both you and them some benefits. It will. You'd be amazed. 888-99-CHART is our number.
Thanks for subscribing to our podcast. If you're ready for a portfolio review, why not take Steve's invitation and sign up for this free service? Appointments are on a first-come, first-served basis. Steve can do a limited number of these, and they are available on Skype if you're not near one of our California offices. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
Now is the time to get through with your question or comment for Steve, 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Halish in Santa Clara. How are you doing, Halish?
Oh, I'm doing good, Steve. Thanks for taking the call and this opportunity.
Thank you.
So I'm calling about actually the stock Intel, INTC, as yes. a ticker symbol. I'm actually looking into buying this as a part of the retirement plan that my wife's company offers. Just like the comment you have made earlier regarding the 401k or retirement plans, and the options here are really poor. And this is the only thing that I can see as a more aggressive kind of an investment available in this plan.
They let her buy.
So I'm looking into
an individual what? Stock. They'll let her buy Intel.
Yeah, they let actually buy a stock fund, which is comprised essentially of Intel.
Really? Okay. That is.
Yes,
pretty...
and then they only limited to about 20% or so of the total portfolio there. So I'm looking into buying this for a long term, maybe 5, 10, or even a little more. I mean,
well, Intel is a very good company. It would be a very good long-term company because it does have staying power. It does.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be pretty risky, and I would never buy 20% of one fund, one stock in my portfolio. That would be too risky in my mind. Right now, Intel's a little pricey at 17 PE, but its growth has picked up, and that's why it's a little pricey. People kind of see good prospects for Intel. Pays a 2.5% dividend yield. I think buying Intel would be fine if you get a nice little pullback. I think it's a bit pricey, and it may stay pricey this month, next month, you know, the next few months, but at some point it's going to have a pullback, and that's kind of when you would rather buy it. A 17 PE, the five-year average PE for Intel is as low as 8 and as high as 17, and today it's at 17. So it's kind of pricey for Intel with a 17 PE. But it has
so
great...
So what would be a good entry point? Man?
I would love to see you buy it around $30 and $32, let's say. It's at 36. You say that's only 4 points. But that's about 15% pullback, and that would be on a chart. It would be an ideal pullback, you know, if it did do that. But it may not. See, this is the problem with that, Halish. I never know. No one really knows. So what if it keeps marching up and then 3 months from now has a 10% pullback, but it went up 20% in that 3 months? You see?
Yeah.
So what you could do if you want to hedge your bets and you really want to be in it is maybe buy a half position now. At least you could say, well, if it runs up on you, at least you get some of the run-up, you know. It will have a pullback, Halish. Every stock does. It's just we don't know how deep and when it might happen. I could tell you this. The stock is a little bit pricey right now, a little expensive for its own history, based on its own history. It's a bit expensive.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Halish. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Glenn in Pleasanton. How you doing, Glenn?
Good. How you doing, Steve?
Good.
Hey, I'm just interested on your take on Gilead, and it seems like it's heading south, and one of the reasons I read is this, I think it's Carl Icahn or whatever, this hostile investor is raising his stake in the company, and I was wondering what your stake is or what your take is on that happening.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. He's raising his stake, and yeah, he might try a hostile takeover. He might try to make them do something different. But generally, that drives the stock price up, not down, generally. And Gilead...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's what I thought, but there's been a lot of press saying that they're afraid he's going to hurt the company, and so the price has been going down, and they're kind of blaming that in the press.
I kind of think that is a buying opportunity. That's what it sounds like. Think about what he's doing. The press is saying he is driving the stock down because whatever he might do. But that doesn't change anything about the fundamentals of the company. And the fundamentals of the company are very, very good. It's growing very fast. Okay. Earnings are growing fast. It's going to make $9.92 a share next year after making $7.96 a share this year. PE is only 16. It's not like it's... way overpriced. The average PE in the last 5 years is as low as 9, as high as 37.
Okay.
I think it's a buying opportunity being set up here, is what I think.
Thank you very much. That's kind of what I was thinking, but I, you know, we're seeing the bad press. I was wondering what your take was. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Glenn. For everybody else, whenever you see bad press about a stock, about a company, determine what kind of bad press it is. Is it the kind of bad press that will reduce its earnings? That's what should be in your mind. The top uppermost thought, is this bad press saying that, oh, they're going to restate their earnings or restate their sales for the last 2 years? They've overstated their sales and earnings, or, you know, there's shenanigans in the bookkeeping. Those kinds of things are very worrisome, and I would stay away from the stock. But it's all about perception. With a hostile possible takeover, that doesn't really affect the earnings. And if the stock goes down because of that, that might be something you want to consider buying, not selling. Well, we're already at a halfway mark. We try to make InvestTalk worth your time each day, but we need your input. What do you want to know more about? Give us a call. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer your money questions now at 888-99-CHART.
What makes a stock fit into a certain category like emerging markets? Or what's your question? Why not ask it now at 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk? You have questions about managing risk? You can talk to Steve right now at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So let's talk about why the average investor's investment returns are so low. This is an article that you can read. And as I mentioned last week, I always like to read articles with a critical eye. And they say this is a study done by Dalbar, quantitative analysts, and they say this is the same. This is the average investor is a blend of equities and fixed income mutual funds has garnered only 2.6% net annualized rate of return over the 10-year. And of course, that's much worse than the overall stock market. But please be careful, because the average investor is a blend of equities and fixed income mutual funds. Mutual funds, okay, which all have costs involved, and it's a blend. And the average investor is made up of not just people, but also all kinds of people, including investment advisors. So don't think it's just people. When it says 2.5% or 2.6% return over 10 years, well, because if you start adding in different kinds of assets and you can't compare apples to apples. You got to compare. You know, you can't say, well, this is mutual funds both comprised of stocks and bonds, and here is the stock market, S&P 500. Well, you can't compare that. That doesn't work. Still, that return is poor. And what's more interesting about that than this actual stats is why. And it's very, very clear. It's all about emotion. Making decisions based on your emotion, your fear and greed. They've done studies on this. It's called behavior finance, and it's called regret and pride that you are afraid of. And they took a study. The study includes stock A and stock B, and if you have one that goes really up high and one that goes down, which one would you sell to take profits off, or which one would you sell in event of a certain scenario? And invariably, people would pick the one to sell is the one that went up. You're selling off the successful one and you're holding on to the one that failed. Think about that. Step back and say, does that make sense? Why would you hold on to the one that failed and is not working, but you're willing to sell off the one that is working? Wouldn't you want to keep the winner and sell the loser? Nope. Because of regret and pride. When you pick an investment, you're going to hold on to it. If it starts to go down, what happens is emotionally what kicks in is your regret and pride about, I picked this bad stock, I regret, or mutual fund, I regret it, but I'm prideful enough to hold on to it, and I'll sell it when I get back even. It will come back eventually. But if you pick one that has done well and it goes up, now you have fear coming in. Fear and greed is something that's pretty detrimental to most portfolios. Fear that you might lose all those gains. So maybe I should take profits while that's up there. And so you hold on to the losers and you sell off the winners or sell back the winners. It's very common to do. And you do it just because if it's a winner or a loser, not because of the fundamentals of the company or that it's hit resistance, nothing like that. It's all the emotion into this. And how do we know that? Because these studies give people examples. What would you do if this and this? What have you done when this and this happened? And all these studies point to the fact that people trade on emotion. Emotion, and that's what gets in the way. And that's why they have underperformance. I have that. I've seen that many, many times in my family. Why are you holding on to this one? Well, because I'm going to wait till I get even. You know, it really took a dive when I bought it, so I'm going to wait till I get even. So, well, why don't you sell it and go buy something that might work? Nope. Okay. That is just, yeah, and trust me, professionals are subject to the same kind of fear and greed. Regret and pride, always. They are the same. They have the same. They have to fight. I have to fight it. Everybody does. Let's get back to the phone. I'm ready for any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHART. How you can reach us? 888-99-CHART. CHART. You can do it anytime.
Hey, Steve. My name's Dave. I'm a new listener of your podcast. I just wanted to know your views on investing in Halliburton right now because of their whole merger with Baker Hughes, and I want to know your views on if that was a good buy or not at the moment. All right, thanks. Bye.
So there's a big consolidation going on, Halliburton and Baker Hughes, two big driller and service kind of worldwide companies for gas and oil industry, big drillers and service companies. And they're combining their efforts, going to make them a much bigger company. Well, that will help. Scale always helps these kind of companies, but both of them have been hurt recently because of the fall of oil and gas, or at least oil prices have fallen sharply. Supply is up, and therefore the future of drilling is weaker. But Halliburton's a very good company. It looks like its earnings, and they're still growing. It's not like they're not growing. They're still growing. Next year they're supposed to pick up growth, go to 10% next year after being up only sales earnings grew 30% this year to $4.33, and it's going to grow 17% next year. Sales the last two quarters up 16% in the most recent quarter, up 10% the quarter before that, and then the four quarters before that it was around in the small single digits, 1-5% growth. So the growth is picking up for Halliburton, yet the stock fell from 75 down to 48. So you can see, well, wait a minute, does that make it cheap? Well, it certainly makes it cheaper than it was. The five-year average P is 7 to 30, and right now it's at 13. So it's a $48 stock with $4.72 of earnings next year. That's going to be what, a 12? 11, 12 PE? Now they have this huge merger. They're going to acquire, Halliburton is acquiring Baker Hughes for about $76 a share or $34 billion. And they are a $40 billion company themselves. So they're doubling their size. Usually that huge of a joining of two companies is pretty problematic. It takes a while to get that to happen because neither one is so much bigger than the other. They're both of equal size. So you got a lot of problems they got to overcome, but they'll be able to get rid of a lot of redundancy and costs too. So I kind of think it's a good idea for these two companies. Maybe not such a good idea for the industry because they're going to be so big. And you're talking about a combined company of $80 billion. and size, which dominates that whole industry. And because of that, you might have problems getting it approved by the Justice Department. They're going to step in. Competition could happen. Good, solid company. I like the company. Long term, it's going to be successful. Let's put it that way. It's time to for InvestTalk Personal about the day-to-day money decisions that can have lasting impact on your life. Sophisticated work-from-home scams and how to spot them. Here are three from a collection compiled by Forbes. In order to ensure a safer online job search experience, today's job seekers need to be aware of how job scams have matured so they can protect themselves. You can protect yourself. Fake URLs. This scam is about as normal as you can imagine. You see a work-from-home listing from a well-known company. Be sure to check the web address against the one that searched for online. Make sure it's legitimate, it's the same. Conducting interviews by chat. If a company only communicates with you through online chat, that could be an indication that it's fraudulent. If a potential employer wants to communicate that way, ask to talk to them by phone. Be very careful. Remember, some of these guys are just getting your information, your social security number, you need to send a check to your checking account directly, wire transfer, so we're going to need that information. When you don't want to give that information out, do not. Being asked to give your personal banking information is one of the main items that you do not do. Do not do. Fake companies, these work-from-home companies, work on the internet, whatever it is, if they're asking for your personal information, that's a big red flag. Personal information means Social Security and real legitimate work companies need your Social Security number, But that's the path to, that's why you got to be so careful who you are going to work for. Make sure it's a legitimate company. How do you make sure it's a legitimate company if it's all online? That's much more difficult. So be very, very careful about giving out personal information. And that's InvestTalk Personal. If there's a money topic you'd like to hear more about, go to InvestTalk.com, click on the Contact Steve button, and write me a note. Or get in touch by calling 888-99-CHART.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to InvestTalk.com today.
Hi, this is Charlie from Modesto. I listen on the internet. I'm calling today about Select Income REIT, ticker symbol S as in Sam, I as in Ida, R as in Robert. I own this, and I'm upside down on it right now, and it looks like it's testing support down at 2320. I've got a real tight stop on it, thinking capitulation time is probably at hand. I know they had a change in management, and the market reacted adversely to that some months back, and that may be what's driving the downward move. I'm just wondering if, in your view, that tight stop makes sense at this point to just take my lumps and move on to something else. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay, let's look and see what they do. It's a $1.3 billion company. It's called Select Income REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. And as everybody knows, REITs must pay their earnings, 90% of their earnings out to you in the form of a dividend. So that's what they're for, for income. Now, this owns and invests in 278 net leased single-tenant properties, primarily on the island of Oahu in Hawaii. Now, I don't know if you know much about real estate in Hawaii, but there's a lot of real estate that you really can't, the homes that you can't buy, because the land underneath, you can't buy the land underneath, it's leased land. So this is doing, owns and invests in 278 net leased single-tenant properties, primarily in the island of Oahu. So how much money are they going to make? And if that, how much of that gets to be paid to you in the form of a dividend? They say they're paying 8.4% dividend yield. It's a $22 stock. It fell sharply the last 3 days. And if it's 8.2%, 8.4%, well, 8% of 22 all by itself is like $1.80, and it's going to make $1.74 next year. How can it pay more than it makes? It can't. See, you can't do that. So you look at, well, how are they doing it? Well, one way they're doing it is they've been issuing more shares. They issued more shares in June. They issued more shares in June of last year. They issued more shares in December of 2012. And these additional shares dilute the current shareholders, but they are able to take that money and pay it to you in the form of a dividend. They can do that. The stock has been falling from 31 down to 22. It broke the support you mentioned, so it's now below that. I think it's something that I would exit. Return on equity is only 9%. Management owns 0% of the company. Now, there has been a recent buy by management, but they don't own hardly any of it. Why? Surprisingly, mutual funds have been buying over the last year. Sales growth is, used to be in the 50-60%. Most recent quarters is still growing, 17-25% the last 3 or 4 quarters. Sales growth is going, but earnings are shrinking. In 2013, they made $2.09. This year, they're going to make $1.93, and next year, $1.74. That's going in the opposite direction. Sales going up, earnings shrinking. What's the story here? Why? 45% debt. Anyways, I would say no. No on SIR, that's the symbol, Select Income REIT. I think you can find a better one. I really do. By the way, they acquired Cole Corporation Income Trust for $10.50 per share in cash, or about $3 billion. Well, the company's only worth $1.3 billion. They only make $56 million a quarter. Where'd they get $1.3 billion? I mean, where'd they get $3 billion from? Huh? They must have used shares to buy it. I'm assuming that dilutes you and me if you own this company. Not a good thing. OPEC was meeting this week, and they were close to getting some kind of a consensus, and then it fell apart. OPEC, the oil companies, oil-producing countries, can't come to agreement on supply. That's pushing stock oil prices down, which to a four-year low at $74.09 a barrel. That's good for you and me as consumers. Good for me. And, of course, we have huge supply. We have dramatically increased our supply here in the U.S., and, of course, that's putting pressure on OPEC. Saudi Arabia is the one that controls or is dominant of the oil producers. So they can cut their production if they want to all by themselves. But I don't think they're going to. I think they're trying to drive the price down a little bit more to shake out those weak producers, even here in the United States. Private companies can't afford to have too low oil prices, even in the shale oil production, and especially in the shale oil production. Interesting dynamics. We're moving into the last segment of the hour. Let's see if we can't get your questions answered before the day is done. There is a line open for you if you want it, 888-99-CHARGE.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you. We'll get right back to Invest Talk now. Your questions and comments are welcome, whether it's a stock or a strategy. Maybe you have a real beginner's question. Those are good, too. And remember, when we take questions about individual stocks, those are learning opportunities, too, for everyone. Because inside every discussion about an individual company, there are principles to apply to all.
888-99-CHARGE, our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program. So far, these long-distance listeners who listen to us at their own schedule. We have our 24-hour listen line that they can call. It's always open at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Elias calling from Copenhagen. I'm a podcast listener and just wanted to get your advice on a company called GoPro, ticker symbol GPRO. Run up quite a bit since its IPO in June, and I know you guys have a general thought about not investing in that IPO within the first 6 to a year. Just wondering what a good entry point would be for this company. I think it has a very high success rate moving forward. Enjoy the show, and I'll be listening. Thank you.
GoPro, GPRO, manufacturing cameras and accessories for the self-capture and sharing of content. They IPO'd, as he said, in June at about $30 a share. Let's see, what was the IPO? $24 was the exact IPO price. The first trade was like $30 a share. Got up to about mid-90s a couple months ago, and now it's at 74, 71. And they recently announced they're issuing more shares. That kind of worries me a little bit. Why are they issuing more shares? They're going to make $1.01 this year per share. They're at $74 a share, and they're going to make $1.01 per share. That's a 74 PE, right? That's what that means. Next year, they're going to make $1.24. Okay, well, last year, they made 54 cents. So the huge growth is what made this go up so much. Now, what is it really worth? Can it sustain that growth? Well, the most recent quarter was that growth was 46 in sales was 46% growth. Quarter before that was 38, and the quarter before that was minus 8. So the number one question in my mind is, what are they doing with that money they had on the supplemental IPO that came out? The stock was down 11% that day when they announced it. Why do they need more money? What are you doing with it? You're expanding? You're buying another company? What are you doing with it? That would be my first question. The company is overvalued. No matter how you look at it, it's overvalued. It will stay overvalued if it can maintain that sales growth. It can't, sales growth, it's 30 to 50% has to maintain that. As soon as that shows weakness, the stock's going to fall because it's just not making enough money to support that price. It's as simple as that. Simple as that. And I worry about, I read an article not that long ago about GoPro. I worry about competition. I mean, how hard is it to make wearable cameras and accessories? What hurdle does another competitor have to get over to, start competing with you? What if Apple decided to do it, or Intel, or Microsoft, or Google? How would that help? How much damage would that be to GoPro? Then again, maybe they have an advantage. It just seems expensive to me. I probably wouldn't do it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Speaking of Apple, the iPhone, the new iPhone, the bigger one for the holiday, it looks like it's going to be a huge success. They sold 10 million units of the iPhone 6 the first weekend. Okay, last year in the holiday season of the iPhone 5, they sold like 50 million of them or so. This year, the iPhone 6, they're on a production schedule of 60 to 65 million in the fourth quarter. And that's as much as they can produce. In other words, they're selling everything they can make. Now, that's going to be very good for Apple. Very good for Apple and Apple. And that's probably why you're seeing the stock do so well. I mean, is that $117? I mean, a month and a half ago, it was 101. Someone emailed me saying, I bought the stock at like 99 or 100, and it went down to 95, 96. Should I sell it? And I told them, well, why did you? My first question is, why did you buy it? What was your reasoning thinking about buying it? And my take was, no, this is a buying opportunity for Apple, in my opinion. Anything below 100. That was after the split. Because of the sales and the cheapness of the price of the stock and the growth rebound. Looks good to me. So Apple looks like it's going to have a good holiday season. Before we close for the hour, if you're an employer who would like to lighten up your workload and give your employees a better quality 401k program, take a look at our solution, our 401k solution. Just go to invest.com, click on the contact us, and write 401k. he'll send you a complete information packet. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and on behalf of Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.